Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Six Feet Under, Season 2, Episode 4, Driving Mr. Mossback is over, but here on Post Show Recaps, we're just getting started. That's right, it is the Six Feet Under podcast on Post Show Recaps, where we are revisiting the critically acclaimed HBO series, episode by episode. My name is Ariel, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Amanda. Amanda, I don't know about you, but I can use an effing cigarette.
Oh, yeah. I was going to ask you, Ariel, what was the last time that you had enough hair for a scrunchie?
it's been an amount of time. Yeah.
1975. I don't know. Not that far back.
Perhaps sometime in the 80s, mm-hmm. late 80s. But yes, here we go. We're like approaching the halfway point of season two, kind of.
Well, we're always approaching something. How mm-hmm. many episodes are there? Season two? Are these 10 episodes?
I think it's 12. I'm looking right now. Usually it's like 12 or 13. Mm-hmm. It is 13. Wow. Yeah.
Wow.
So maybe not so. Yeah, kind of.
We're inching ever so further. We're like at the quarter way. We're having our quarter way check in.
Our quarter quell.
How did you feel about this episode, Driving Mr. Mossback?
I will say I'm a sucker for a road trip, both in life and on a show or a movie. So I thought this was really interesting. Love a Nate Claire pairing. I feel like we haven't, you know, we've had Nate and Claire, but this really feels like the first time since maybe like right after Nate Senior died, where they went to like the supermarket and they had their moment. Yeah. Like this is the rare full episode Claire and Nate kind of side story, which I really liked.
Yeah, that was fun to get that character pairing. The headline for this, I'm really excited. We have our first introduction to Lisa, played by the great Lily Taylor. Mm-hmm. This was sort of like when we got our first Billy episode and I got like the tingles of my spine. Lisa's here. I don't want to give away too much, but this is not going to be the last time that we see her. So that's an exciting
development. That's crazy. I didn't even know that.
He's in Seattle and they're in LA. Why would they ever cross paths again?
Why would she ever take that job mm-hmm. where she has to basically aid in the torture of animals?
Uh-oh, yeah, for the evil film industry. Mm-hmm. Yeah, another really good episode. Maybe the weakest of this season so far. Mm-hmm. For me, but you know, still moving things along and a lot of really interesting stuff to get into.
Yeah, I think probably the weakest, but no less entertaining. I'm always riveted by something these kooky cats are doing, whether it's Brenda's mom, who we get to see again. Oh, love spending time with Brenda's mom.
with Margaret. But I will say, Ariel, there are no animals harmed in the making of this podcast. Oh,
thank God. I mean, hopefully not in our recording right now. I'm mm-hmm. hoping, you know, nothing comes up in the next 45 minutes to an hour. But I think we can safely say no animals will be harmed for sure.
I hope so. All right. Let's jump into it.
Oh, my God. Here we go. We're going to jump right now. Everybody hold your breath. Driving Mr. Bosback, the name of the episode, directed by Michael Cuesta, written by Rick Cleveland. Oh my God, now another city I have to keep track of. Seattle, there, now Cleveland. Yikes. So here we go. This week, Harold Mosbeck's death brings Nate and Claire back to Nate's old stomping grounds of Seattle to drive the body back to LA. It seems like that tour that Mr. Mosbeck was on was incredibly boring, and that might have caused his demise. But first, they visit Nate's super platonic, crunchy granola friend Lisa, who definitely is not in love with Nate. Sarcasm. While there, Nate experiences a mini seizure in front of Claire and downplays its significance. It's obvious from Nate's reaction, though, that he's completely freaked out, and Claire is no dummy. We've seen her be a good detective in the past. Meanwhile, Brenda isn't invited on the road trip, which Nate wants to keep reminding her about at the beginning of the episode. Instead spends her time with her mom, tracking down the woman whom her father seems to be having an affair with. Also seems very intrigued by a client who is a sex worker. David, meanwhile, comes to Keith's rescue and babysits Taylor, since Keith or Eddie cannot pick her up from school. Keith's mouthy niece, who loves chocolate milk and wants to draw, not color, important distinction. Taylor says Keith sucks because he looks, that Eddie sucks because he looks at himself in the mirror too much and doesn't know how to speak to children. And David, of course, is very happy to hear that. Does that mean we could see a potential rekindling of David and Keith in the future? Ooh. Perhaps. And finally, Ruth is still rebuilding her foundation or whatever. She spends her time cleaning both her physical and metaphorical house and doing some chores.
This is some furious rage cleaning, if I've ever seen it, Ariel.
I've never seen Pledge sprayed that angrily. It was just like so much anger on that poor wooden banister.
Yes.
Where should we start? We could start. I mean, there isn't much to Ruth. We could get that out of the way.
No, let's start with Nate and Claire's road trip, and I'll tell you why. Because I just opened Google Maps and
looked up, and boy, does it look complicated.
Yeah, looked up the drive from Seattle to Los Angeles. Ariel, do you have a guess on hours in the car here?
Okay, I want to do Price is Right rules. I don't want to go over. I want to get as close as possible.
Well, this is really tough because I don't think we're accounting for like traffic here, but so this is
like, let's do like approximately.
Yeah, let's do approximately.
I would say at least, where are they? They're in LA, not Northern California.
Yeah, so they are. Yeah, so they're driving from Seattle to Los Angeles.
God, this would be like 15 hours.
More. It looks like
77.
77 hours. No, it looks like the fastest you could do it is probably in just under 18 hours. This is, you know, and you have two choices of routes here. You could go through Sacramento or you could go through Reno. This is a long drive. That's like a lot of time in the car. This is a big commitment. Is Claire going to do this whole drive now that
maybe
Nate is on his seizure medications? Usually they don't want you to drive after you've had a seizure.
That's true. Yes. I mean, and it does make sense. Clearly, I don't think this was Nate's original reason for inviting Claire necessarily, but I think for sure when he tells her, he's like, oh yeah, we can share the drive on the way back. There is something to that, but this is a lot for one person. Maybe they'll take a break because of the circumstances.
You have got to take a break. This is at least 2 days. You definitely want to stop somewhere overnight here. This is a really serious road trip, and you got to imagine you're hitting some traffic on the way.
Oh, God, I mean, right, especially into LA, and this like is 7 easily, hours before that.
You're gonna have to stop at a motel when you're like 6 miles from LA in the night.
Nate, I can't drive anymore. I know you had a seizure, but like, I can't do this. Poor Claire. But yeah, this is really, I love that Claire gets to see a new side of Nate. But before we get to the actual road trip, there's a whole part where like, Nate is so, it's so interesting to me that like at that dinner scene with the whole family, with the Fishers, that Nate is like, so clearly the way he volunteers to go get the body, he is basically saying, not like I have anything around here to stick around for, like to the point of his relationship with Brenda right now and how he feels like kind of iced out and not close to her. Obviously, it's not helping that he hasn't felt vulnerable enough to share his health issues with her. And instead of being like, I don't know, cool about it in some way, he just keeps asking Brenda if it's weird that he didn't ask her to come with him.
Yeah. No, this trip was a test and Brenda failed.
She failed out of class last week.
Yeah.
Now she's failing Nate's test. And Nate is basically telling her this is a test. And she's like, Nate, I don't like being around you when you're flossing. And also I'm trying to read. So you should probably.
Well, I'll tell you, the great Jess Sterling, the ghost of the 6 Feet Under podcast, DM'd me when she was watching this. And she was like, I can't believe that Brenda has the nerve to be mad at Nate for flossing while she's peeing in front of him.
You know, I need my private bathroom pee reading time for my, I don't know, architectural design digest rather magazine. I don't know. I was trying to imagine. I can't remember now if we get like a look at what she's reading, if it's like some awful trashy.
We should go back and check. Yeah.
You know, like Us Weekly magazine, or if it's something more classy. But yeah, this is kind
it
of
is
like
more evolved than Us Weekly.
This is more like the magazine that she would want around if she was inviting Trevor back over for dinner.
Oh my goodness, Trevor. And then we have Scott, the tax law guy from last episode from the bar. We're gonna get into him. But yeah, this was definitely, I think, Nate trying to evoke some sort of jealousy or test Brenda to see if she would care if he got away for a while. Brenda is completely unbothered by the idea of Nate going on this road trip.
He's like, does it bother you? And she's like, does what? Like, she's not even like paying attention to him. Does it bother you that I'm clearly going through something and you can't pick up what I'm putting down is what is the energy that he's giving. But yeah, she eventually tells him, please give it a rest, Nate. Like, he literally asks her, I believe, three or four times. And she's like,
he's waiting for the right answer. The right answer is, I'm going to miss you so much, sweetie. Can't I go too?
And she's not going to bite. She's like, I have to go to bed, please. I've been doing a lot these days during the day, so I need my rest.
She needs her beauty rest. And this is like very different than what their relationship was like a few months ago when she tags along to the funeral director's conference. Like, and she seems to be interested in spending time with Nate. So
for sure,
the honeymoon is way over.
It's
on
so
these
over.
Two. And Nate takes this opportunity to extend the invitation to Claire. Like, he definitely does need some help with the driving. So there's a way that that makes sense. And I'd be curious to hear what you think about this, Ariel, but like, I do feel like he's being kind of empathic and caring towards her by recognizing like she's been through a lot in the past few weeks and maybe this kind of distraction or bonding time where he can maybe make up for the fact that he wasn't so available to her when she needed him going through the Gabriel Demas situation.
Yeah, I think absolutely. And, you know, we talk about this all the time, especially with the Fishers, of like multiple things being true at once. And that's like such a normal human thing, especially when it comes to emotions. And I think, you know, at the end of last episode, when Claire is so vulnerable and Nate feels, even though he's being a butthead in that scene, I'm sure on some level he feels bad about the fact that she was reaching out to him and he wasn't picking up on that for obvious reasons to him. And then here, yes, he volunteers because he's happy to get out of Dodge and happy to go visit his old life in some way that like made him probably feel more like himself. Like, I don't feel like myself right now. I would love to see this old life that I had. And yeah, Claire, come with me. It'll probably suit you. Like, I think he's the kind of person that's going to put himself in her position because that's how he thinks about everything. It's like, oh, what would I think of that? And it's like, yeah, at her age, for sure, this could be like a cool thing. It could be a cool bonding experience. He even offers to pay for her plane ticket. I think there's something for sure smart about that point of him just like on some level doing the right thing, even though it's maybe like third or fourth on the list.
Yeah, it's nice to like watch these characters. Like, I do feel like we've been like a little bit like over inundated with these anti-heroes to say like, oh, part, at least part of this character's motivation isn't entirely selfish. Like, I do think that that's true. So they go on this trip, they fly there. They're both big Sleater-Kinney fans, it turns out, Ariel.
I loved the scene of them on the plane. It was like so genuinely authentic to like a sibling relationship where she's like giving him a hard time and he's like, okay, are you going to like be this way the whole time? Because did you just invite me here to keep an eye on me? And she's like, no, I thought it would be like a nice thing to do together, but I'm starting to regret it now. And then she's like, okay, fine, I believe you. Like the way, you know, like siblings challenge each other and call each other and their shit. And then unfortunately, because of, you know, foundations of houses that siblings share together. Oh my goodness,
cracks in the foundation.
Cracks, rather, they can't, you know, sometimes a sibling, especially, or a family member misreads. Just because you do something 99 out of 100 times doesn't mean that one extra time you can't do something for a different reason. And it does seem, I love when she finally is like, okay, fine, I believe you. Like, you did it for the good reason. Let's move on and I'll stop giving you a hard time about being a Sleater-Kinney fan.
Yeah.
I almost said Letterkenny. I'm like, wait, that's something different.
So they're like, they're cute together, going on this trip. And luckily they have a place to stay in Seattle. His former house that he stayed in with roommate Lisa.
Mm-hmm. Yes. This is fascinating. I love the first look we get at the house. It's like on a hill. It's very like almost, I don't know, Adam's Family. There's something kind of almost ominous about it, but also cool that Claire, I think you see it in her reaction. Like she's like, oh my God, you used to live here? This is the place where you used to live?
He always lives in weird, spooky houses.
He can't help himself.
Yeah, I have to say, like, she lives in one of these, like, old houses. It's, like, sort of partially maintained. This gives, like, so you can see when they pull up, like, they can, you know, they're a little bit outside of the city. You can see the Space Needle in the downtown.
Yeah. Often these are the hills that you've probably seen online, people slipping down because of all the ice hits in that area that they don't really have the infrastructure for. Speaking of blueprints, etc.
Yeah. This kind of like big old house, like we're probably like at some point, like six different people are living, like crashing on mattresses on the floor in different rooms. Like definitely
vegan mattresses. Don't get it twisted.
This gave me a little bit of like a, you know, Philly in my 20s vibe. I definitely have known about living situations like this.
But I want to visit your old house.
Yeah. So this house is a whole vibe. And, you know, Claire is trying to figure out what kind of person Lisa is on the plane over. Is she one of these crunchy granola hippies? Yes. Backpacky, maybe a little bit grunge. No, Ariel, grunge died long before Kurt Cobain.
Wow. Nate coming with the hot takes. Okay, grunge was
move
already
over Pitchfork
dead.
here come listen to the grand elder of music knowledge speak.
Nate is really humble about this, but he started Pitchfork, okay? He was there for the beginning of what it became. And he's just like so confidently and cavalierly says that was really, really funny.
Yeah, no, he's schooling his little sister here in the true history of grunge. But Lisa defies categories, Ariel. Nothing ever surprises her. She's just this like magical vegan pixie dream girl.
Yeah, she has a lot of opinions about things. I do think there's this really interesting like Venn diagram of Brenda and her. And the way that like she, in a lot of ways they're different, but in a lot of ways they're very similar. She's very opinionated. She's very sure of herself, very confident. And, you know, the things that she cares about, she seems to know a lot about.
Yeah. So definitely some similarities with Brenda, definitely some polar opposite differences as well. So really, really fascinating contrast. And, you know, in what are the women that Nate gets involved in? And the thing about Nate and Lisa's history is that, you know, it definitely wasn't a relationship. They just had occasional sex together, but it was only on a friendship basis.
Only on a friendship basis. Nate was very clear with her every time. It only happened about, let's say, 5 or 6 times total. And yeah, on Nate's side, there was no, it was very clean. There was no messiness with the, there was no blurring of boundaries. And it's very clear to Claire and to us, the viewer, that it was not necessarily the case for Lisa's character.
Yeah, this like this Nate being like, we had occasional sex together, but it was only on a friendship basis. I was very honest with her about what it did and didn't mean. Like, this is this is like pure butthead. This is butthead Nate Mount Rushmore moment right here.
Yes, and the idea that he was, I was thinking about it, the idea that he was basically like just so lazy at times, like he really wanted to get some, but he was like, oh, I don't really want to go outside. It's kind of cold. It's raining.
There's like a woman literally
there's a woman here. I'll just write her a letter about how like very friendship based this is, and that's fine. Like, how could this ever get messy? It doesn't make sense to me, the butthead.
Yeah, Lisa, like Brenda, is a little bit of like a caricature of what like a person would be, like what, like this, there are these kind of like these different archetypes of like 2002 girl,
right?
And they're both pretty extreme in their characterization. It's funny, like Lisa, I think, like to put her in context, like the idea that somebody is like vegan, the idea that people are like conserving what, like the sign in the bathroom, like if it's brown, flush it down, if it's yellow, let it mellow. It's like this, I think, was a little bit more on the fringe in 2002 than it is today, where like you just meet vegan people and it's not a big deal, but like, you know.
Right, there's no longer all the shock value in being vegan and being like, wait, you made what kind of meatloaf without
what?
Meat?
Wait, with what? With what foo? With what? I don't
who
know.
Foo? Who is she? For sure. I remember when I was watching this, there was no like frame of reference for me. And now I dabble in vegan food myself in my own personal cuisine.
Do you have a tofu meatloaf recipe, Ariel?
I do not, but
is lots of garlic.
The secret is lots of garlic. That's great for your gut health. I do make my own pancakes, as you know.
I guess
they're vegan.
It's like a health foodie brand of pancakes.
You've seen the brand.
Yes, Lisa would approve.
And it was on sale, which she would probably also approve of. Speaking of sale,
did you
want to call
out the co-op?
Yes, this is what I wanted to talk about, the co-op, because I love this idea of, you know, sales are, Lisa mentions to Nate that sales are up 15% since you left. And I'm like, wait, is that because Nate left?
Nate was the problem.
Because we will find out later that there are at least a dozen women.
There's women in Seattle.
Who would lose their minds if they found out that Nate was still there. So maybe there was this group of women who just like couldn't shop at the co-op anymore.
That's my theory too.
To see him at work in his probably like adorable little like apron, restocking the whatever he was
wearing,
doing
his special Nate shirt that
his
made them all.
Special Nate t-shirt, that's right. And you know, they was just driving the women crazy, so they stopped coming to the co-op, and now sales are back up this quarter. The numbers this quarter are looking very good.
Wow, the quarterly returns. I'm like so ashamed of to be a representative of the female persuasion, like how basic we are, but like that this Nate character could wreak havoc on a whole major city. Like,
just like an entire city. It's not even a small town where options are more limited. It's just like, it's a whole metropolitan urban center.
Nate brought Seattle to its knees.
It must have been the sideburns. That's all I can say.
Brenda, you don't know what you got, girl.
You literally don't, because you're so busy peeing and looking at your magazine, you won't even look at your man, even if he's not flossing.
Oh boy. So yeah, Claire's unimpressed with the meatloaf. I'm sure it's nasty. I'm sure this is nasty.
2002 vegan meatloaf for sure probably tasted like absolute trash. My worry, as soon as she's flushing it down the toilet, I'm like, oh God, no, Claire, you got to break that up a little. What if that thing gets stuck? Like, I really thought.
This is an old house. You don't know about plumbing. These pipes.
Have you looked at the blueprint? The blueprint is like ancient. It's written on like a scroll. You can't just throw a whole piece of meatloaf down the toilet. It's crazy. Oh, I really thought that was my big worry of like one of these like super random, ridiculous situations that Claire gets herself into. But thankfully, it turns out the tofu meatloaf was brown. So she flushed it down and it went down successfully.
She used more turmeric. It would have been yellow. And then turmeric, also a miracle spice. Lots of medicinal properties. But, you know, in addition to introducing like Lisa into the equation, this trip allows Nate and Claire to have some one-on-one time together. And when they sneak out to eat something that walked the earth, we get this situation where, you know, Nate has all of these signs. First, he smells sulfur. He gets this deja vu experience. It turns out this is going to be seizure aura. And then he loses control of his language. At first, Claire thinks it's a joke, but then immediately realizes that something's very wrong. He gets out of the car and pukes. This fast food, like, order, like, worker person is like the worst. He's like threatening to get his manager,
and Claire's like, shut up.
There's a legit medical emergency happening. Claire is terrified.
Claire is so scared. I love, first of all, yes, it's so this like deja vu that is happening. It's like watching you know, like a slow train crash. There's something so tragic about it. You just know, you're like, oh God, no, wait, is this going to be one of those things? And then the deja vu sets in and he says that and you're like, oh no, what does that mean? And then he, like, we've talked about this before, of like Peter Krause being such a great comedic actor.
Yeah.
And that part where he's like getting the order wrong does have like a twinge of comedy to it, if especially if you don't actually realize what's happening and he's saying like the words over and over again and sounding silly and like, but most troublingly, like, he's like stuck on this track of speaking, like he can't like stop himself.
Yeah.
And it's really sad to see. And to the Claire point, she is so freaked out. She keeps telling I love the like little ways. I always talk about this, but the little ways in which Claire shows her caring for her siblings, especially. And here it's like the way, it's not just that she's telling the guy on the thing to shut up. It's like, she is so confident and like nobody, like nothing else matters right now. Yeah. My brother is having some kind of reaction to something. And even though I don't understand, you're going to shut up. And it's really sweet from Claire, even though for sure she is scared, like you said.
Yeah. I mean, she's just like, she's only 17 at this point. Like, she has no idea how to contextualize what's happening to Nate, because of course he hasn't told her yet, but you know, he gets out of the car, he frantically calls his doctor. He's eventually, Claire and he are going to go to the hospital, and he's diagnosed with a seizure. He gets prescribed an anti-seizure medication. I still think he's probably not driving for a while. They usually want you to be some number of months seizure free before you're behind the wheel of a car again. Wow. And he's, you know, I think he's doing what any big brother would do, like trying to present like, you know, it's not a big deal. This is like, he tells her what it is. So he's like being honest with her, and he tries to minimize that, like, you know, lots of people don't know they have it. Now I have the medication. It's going to be totally under control. Don't tell mom. I agree. Do not tell mom. Yeah,
don't tell mom. She's working on her. Her house will come crumbling down if he tells her. I love the like little moment, or the little like nonverbal exchange between them, of when Claire asked, does David know? And then he says yes. And like that understanding of, on the one hand, Claire's like, oh, well, Dave, no, and I don't know. But then also like, good, I'm glad yeah. someone else knows, was really interesting to me. And again, there's just like very rich emotional dynamic between siblings. It always like hits me really hard, especially when yeah. it comes to like these unfortunate serious things. And she, you know, Claire the detective, she's like, uh-huh, not a big deal, eh? We'll see about that.
Yeah, yeah. She's not like, you know, she's not completely credulous to everything that Nate is putting down, which I think is very smart. What I don't love from Nate is, don't tell David. Like, David knows yeah. about the AVM, but he doesn't want Claire to tell David about the seizure, which of mm-hmm. course would like escalate this to, you know, now he is symptomatic, right? It wasn't right. just discovered incidentally. He does have this symptom here, something to deal with. And he's trying to keep that under wraps. He's still not ready to fully confront this. Obviously something that's weighing really heavily on Nate, because, you know, eventually when they're, you know, when they go back to Lisa's the night before they're going to head out on the road, mm-hmm. we see that poor sweet, sweet Lisa comes in because she wanted to make sure that Nate had enough blankets.
The room is cold. I put you in the cold room because I know. No, I'm just kidding. No, because I wanted to be able to bring you this blanket. Mm-hmm. But to your point, she is able to just be there for him. He breaks down. She consoles him. Like, it's so sad to see her do in less than 24 hours that they've been there something that Brenda has been unable to do for Nate.
Yeah, I mean, just little things like, I know you, I know something's wrong, like yeah. just noticing that something is wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, so like, whereas Brenda is failing this test of being like, I it's obvious I want you to come to Seattle with me.
She should never go back to school, Brenda. She's just failing all the tests.
She's failing all of the tests. Like, Lisa is like very, very keyed in. It's a contrast. Like, you want to say that Lisa is being much more responsive and more emotionally available and more supportive of Nate, but it's the beginning of a little bit of this intense, overbearing, nurturing quality that I think is a little bit of an extreme. Like we said, if Brenda is an extreme in one direction, Lisa almost goes like above and beyond to the point where she's like a little bit of a, you know, I used the term caricature before, but this is a woman, Ariel, who gets on her hands and knees to reason with ants. To explain to them that they have to leave.
Get out. Get out. You should go. Who are you talking to over there, Lisa? Oh, just the ants in my house. This is adorable. And also, like, so extra for no reason. I, at my old, maybe like two apartments ago, I had an ant problem. I have to say, I did not try this. That's
well, then
me.
How do you know it wouldn't work?
That's what I'm saying. Shame on yeah. me for not, you know, at least trying to reason with these beings, these yeah. ants. They walk the earth. Lisa would not.
They walk the earth. You were contributing to the global slavery of animals. I love how Claire is like, presents a contrasting view. Like, my dad used to douse them in lighter fluid and torch them.
Yeah, when she said that, I have to say, I was not surprised. I was not really surprised. Ooh, this is not the most shocking thing I've ever learned on the show.
It's in the DSM under antisocial behavior, I think. Yeah, like, so, I mean, what's your read of Lisa at this point? Do we think that Lisa is, like, so she says, Lisa says to Claire, mm-hmm. for years, I waited for Nate to discover that, like, I was the person for him, that I'd been here all along. Like, yeah. is Lisa the type of woman that Nate should be with?
Oh, I think Lisa is interesting. Lisa definitely has, like, that intensity that Nate seems to appreciate in women, in his partners. I think You know, Nate, what's interesting about their dynamic is that Nate has a lot more power in that dynamic than he does in the dynamic with Brenda. And like, it's a little bit of a like a flipping of the script, where Brenda, at least right now, and it seems like for a lot of their relationship, has had the power. And like, his standing in their partnership is always kind of at the mercy of how Brenda is feeling at any particular point. And the Lisa thing feels so unbelievably on the other side, like almost one-sided. She's willing to seemingly forgive him for everything. You know, he can do no wrong. I want to keep your shirt, Nate, but I won't tell you that. Oh, it must have gone to Goodwill. Oh crap, did you find it?
She knew exactly where that shirt was.
Oh, they hid it underneath a different shirt. Crazy he found it. And then that awkward interaction where he's like, no, you keep it. It's like, Nate, you already like stepped in it. Now you're kind of making it worse. What's your read on their relationship?
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah. So, I mean, we know that Nate has never had a long-term relationship before Brenda. This 8 months is his record. And, you know, he's probably historically been a little bit of a commitment phobe. Maybe he likes the chase. Maybe the reason that Brenda is the person that he's eventually decided to, quote, settle down with is because she refuses to be tamed. And that's part of what makes Nate interested in her. Whereas Lisa is very much like, I'm tame. Here's my belly. I'm here for you. You know, yeah. go
I'll do whatever.
And have sex with a dozen other women in Seattle, and I'll just be here shouting at the ants, hoping that you'll discover that I'm the woman of your dreams.
Go and bring down the sales numbers for this quarter at the co-op with your mere presence. It doesn't matter to me, even though I'm invested in the co-op. Yeah, I think it is. It's interesting, and it's a little bit sad. I mean, I would say like just north of sad, perhaps, to like watch her in
north of Seattle. That's driven 20 hours just to get here.
Listen, Canada exists. Okay, that's all I will say. And Vancouver's beautiful.
I love Vancouver.
My first time, very quickly, I will say my first time visit. I did like a Seattle, Vancouver, big bash together where I was like, okay, I'm in Seattle. I might as well go to Vancouver because, you know, I had the option to and I had time, blah, blah, blah. So I love both of those places. Getting the like look at Seattle in the very beginning of the episode on the bus tour, I was like, oh my God, wait, where's
Pike's,
Seattle?
Pike's Place crazy. Market. Pike's I was market. There. They throw the there. Fish. Yeah.
I thought I invented it. I was the Kurt Cobain of Pike's Place Market. But no, it was there so much longer.
I love the Pacific before. Northwest. I love Vancouver. I love Seattle. I love Victoria. Like, what's that other place?
Portland.
I love Portland. I love all those places up there. No, it's beautiful. But that's not what we were talking about. We were talking about Nate and Lisa.
I was saying like it's a little bit like sad to watch her be so. What's sad about it to me is like imagining how many times there was this kind of interaction where like she was there for him in a moment of need, and she was hoping that would like send a signal to him in some way about her worth, to, you know, his estimation of her worth. And it never did. And it's just like, oh God, that's sad. These poor, and then these poor dozen other women across the whole city going through similar.
They didn't even get the call when he was coming back.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to, has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
I will say, like, as much as Lisa is, like, vulnerable and seems to be in love with Nate, she's also got this kind of, like, powerful, all-knowing, like, Mama Earth goddess thing to her where she's like, nothing surprises me, Nate. I knew you'd come back. I can always tell. Like, she's, you know, and whether it's put on or not, whether it's, like, genuine or not, it does, like, ground her in a way that keeps her from being such a tragic figure. And, you know, now for Nate, it's like, it's been in these 8 months, he's in a very different place from where he was when he left Seattle. His father was still alive. Now his father's dead. And that's like a big confrontation of mortality. And he's discovered that he has this condition that's making his mortality sort of something that he is acutely aware of. And I think we see this sweet moment at the end where, like, somebody who is emotionally available and caring might be exactly the kind of thing that Nate needs right now.
Yeah, for sure. And again, for her to be there in a way that Brenda, like, fundamentally cannot be, cannot, like, get out of her own way to see what Nate actually needs, especially after Nate tried to be there for her when she was going through, you know, her depressive episode. It's unfortunate, and you feel bad for Nate, even though he's kind of created the situation for himself insofar as the, like, the secrecy of his condition. This is something of his own making.
And like Brenda, you know, maybe hasn't created the space for him to talk about it, but he's also kind of allowed that to happen. They're both definitely, they're both culpable in that dynamic. And Brenda's had her own little side mission this episode because Mama Chenoweth, Margaret, has beckoned her to the parking lot of a spa because they're on a stakeout to find out who is jumping Bernard's saggy ass.
As much as I love a road trip, as I previously said, I'm an extra sucker for a caper, some kind of spy situation.
A stakeout?
A stakeout, exactly. This is so funny. Brenda's like, I thought something serious was wrong. Like, is this why you brought me here to show me the scrunchie on Dad's, you know, what is that? I almost called it a joystick. Wow, I'm such a driver. What is it? In his car. With the Virginia Slims on the dashboard.
Wow.
He doesn't smoke Virginia Slims, Amanda. I know my husband.
Yeah. No, it's very few people do smoke Virginia Slims. But Margaret Chenoweth is on the case. She's a real true detective, another show that I'm covering on the network right now. So this becomes like a little like buddy cop moment with Brenda and her mom hanging out together, and they talk about, you know, the Chenoweth's open relationship, how there's ground rules, Ariel. You have to tell first. That's the first rule. That's very important. That's the one that Bernard broke this time.
Yes.
No hotels over $300 a night or under $75 a night.
The under 75 is hilarious. It's like, we're not peasants, okay? We don't do affairs in Motel Sixes. Like, so judgy.
How do you think that's changed with inflation? What do you think the current numbers are?
Probably like nowhere under 100. And nowhere above like 450 maybe.
Honestly, now like you're lucky if you can find a place for under 300 in, yeah, right, in LA.
What a dream. What it was back then. No, for sure. Some of these fancy places that these like rich people, yeah, to not use a less kind word, are frequenting anyway. And it's just like something about the idea of like, if you go to a crappy hotel, I don't want you bringing that back to my house.
Well, there's like, I mean, bed bugs is like a real concern. True. No, yeah, that, yeah, yeah. I mean, that's no, mm-hmm, joke.
Yeah, no, that's that is much more important than any relationship openness or rules that they have. That should be like a rule. No bed bugs.
So the conversation.
But there are others that we can't even remember because there are so many. Mm-hmm. Other rules.
No, there's lots of rules. We can't get into all the rules right now. We can't do the whole constitution of the Chenoweth marriage. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of talk in this exchange between Brenda and her mother about like these arrangements and like what a relationship, like, you know, kind of sexual politics and relationships. Brenda's very intrigued that she has a client who's a prostitute. Which does not shock Margaret Chenoweth.
Impress Margaret when she says, "Oh God," she's like, "That's the, is that supposed to impress me?" Like, I had lots of clients
who were prostitute
sex workers, and then Brenda's like, "Oh my God, not everything is about you. I'm literally just sharing something that happened to me in my day."
Yeah,
and then for it to come full circle where her mom says it back to her, like, "Not everything is about you, Brenda." Is so funny and also tragic. Like, it's played, yeah, mostly for laughs because these actors are so capable, but it's like ultimately a very tragic interaction of like they can't get past their history and their old blueprint, mm-hmm, if you will.
Oh my goodness. It's all about your foundation and your blueprint.
All about that. And we know, unfortunately, that, you know, Brenda's blueprint, her foundation is on shaky ground. She did not have a very stable foundation, and a lot of that had to do with decisions that her parents made when she was at a young age, and this is like the dysfunction between them on full display.
Yeah, we get a lot of insight, more insight, I'll say, because we've already seen quite a bit of this, of like where Brenda comes from and why she is the way she is. At some point, you know, Brenda accuses her mother of being a narcissist. Margaret says, just because your parents are shrinks doesn't mean you know anything about psychology. Which I will co-sign.
Nate like runs out of the bushes like, yes, yes, that's exactly right.
And you know, and they like argue. I mean, Margaret is truly unhinged. At some point she goes to attack this woman, and she first tells Brenda, I'm not going to make a scene. I just need to personalize the experience and humanize the situation.
And humanize. Oh, my God. If this isn't like Brenda's mom channeling Brenda, this is hilarious. Or at least like, you know, the chicken came before the egg in this case. But just, mm-hmm, the way like the circular argument almost, it's so funny to watch her rationalize this behavior with these just like, you know, seemingly mad-libbed you know, psychiatric terms.
Yeah.
And that's, yeah, you know, not that they're all that impressive. And then we get a shot of someone who I believe is Julie Bowen.
Oh yeah. Really, let me see, what would I know Julie Bowen from
Modern Family.
Oh yes, it does look like Julie Bowen. I thought that. Amazing. So she is the side piece.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Look, her stock has risen.
She's
piece. Now she had a whole house with all this.
She has a foundation and a house, and yeah. And Margaret tries to like literally pull her out of the window and beat her up. She says,
"This is criminal."
Her final words are, "I'll see you in hell, and I hope you like herpes."
She'll try anything. She'll try anything to get back at this one. I'm sorry. I was having a very powerful reaction to what she did to her.
The herpes. Yeah.
Yeah. And thankfully, the woman has the wherewithal to drive away and get away from.
Well, she had to get to lunch with Bernard. He was waiting for her.
That's kind of, and I will say, that's like a detail that you did not need to repeat to Bernard's wife. You could have left that part out.
That's on
her. She got what she deserved.
Julie Bowen, come on. Yeah, I mean, Brenda.
And then her and Brenda are like, Brenda like sees her for what she is, and she calls her out, and then she's kicked out of the car, but Brenda is only too happy to get out of the car.
Yeah, it gets pretty ugly. Like, at first, I think Brenda kind of rightly points out, like, why did I need to be here? Like, why did I need to witness this? This is just so that you could have an audience. And, you know, they get into this argument. Brenda accuses her mother of being pathetic. Brenda says, you're just jealous because I haven't let you destroy my life like you do to everyone else. Really, really like biting, you know. Margaret says, you spent 32 years being your brother's nursemaid to avoid having any emotional life of your own. And now that he's been put away, you're going to have to face your own demons. And sweetheart, they are legion. This is harsh. I mean, we've said as much, Ariel, when Billy went to the psychiatric hospital, that like part of Brenda's reaction was because she was afraid of sort of being left alone with herself, of having like no excuse for why she wasn't, you know, pursuing her own life, pursuing her own goals, feeling fulfilled, having successful relationships. Like, she has always looked at these excuses to, you know, explain her distress and discontent. And now that all of those excuses have been ripped away, she's sort of left alone with herself, which is in some ways the scariest thing of all. It's not what you want your shrink to tell you, and it's definitely not what you want your mother to tell you. There's gentler ways to be coaxed to receiving this message, but that is not how the Chenoweths do things, Ariel.
No, just like the Fishers, they have their own blueprint, and they are not going to change the way they do things, unfortunately, because you have to be, in order to change your behavior, you have to be aware of your behavior, and that does not seem to be a thing that is present here.
Yeah. This ends with a slap and Margaret kicking Brenda out of the car. And Brenda leaves and Margaret starts crying. So big day for all of the Chenoweths. It's a shame Bernard missed this whole show.
Yeah, it's like his fault. He caused the show and then he wasn't there to watch it go down. He missed the whole third act. He thought he knew how it, well, he's about to find out how it ends because he's, you know, whatever, but this is his fault, and it's very telling that like he's the only one missing from this scene. It's like all the women in his life right now are kind of dealing with the fallout of his decisions.
Yeah, so that's where we leave our Brenda. We'll see how she and Nate reunite when he's done with his road trip. I think that those are like the two major plot lines of the episode. We also get more with David coming to help Keith out because Keith is now taking care of Taylor while his mother is getting surgery. And Carla, Taylor's mother, is still nowhere to be found.
And this is obviously super upsetting for Keith to hear because this is like his worst fear. Like, wait, not only can you not get in touch with her, now her number has been disconnected and he was already thinking about like filing a missing persons report. And, you know, now he probably is feeling that even more keenly. It's really sad for Taylor to be hearing this. Like, I'm always hyper aware of what she can hear, like the conversations that they're having around her and the information that she's clearly retaining about her mom, about her mom's behavior, about the way that her uncle and her grandma speak about her mom. It's upsetting, to say the least.
Yeah, Taylor's like having a rough time. So she's going to go and stay with Keith. And the reason that David has to pick her up from school is because, you know, Keith is held up being a cop and doing cop things, and Eddie's working a double, and David is all too happy to be on call to do these favors.
Once again, I will invoke the David moment. Yeah, sure, I'm happy to follow you around all day and do nothing else. I have nothing to do on my own time, and this is just an extension of that. I mean, yes, and to be clear, it is regardless of the reason why he did it, it is a genuinely kind thing mm-hmm. that he does for Keith here to be there for him in that moment and pick up Taylor from school when Eddie, it seems like Eddie's just probably too busy. We'll learn from Taylor looking in the mirror for too long to pick her up.
That's what firefighters do, right?
They the classic up. Firefighters. So yeah, once again, it's like Taylor. And again, like the Taylor thing of this guy named David picked me up. At least it's someone I met before, but like, what does that mean as far as my mom, as far as David, like the way that her life, that Taylor's life specifically seems to be so all over the place right now. It's not great for a child, if I do say
so. No, it's not great. It's not great for Taylor. And it is like very kind of David to do this for Keith and also to do this out of concern for Taylor. But we find out not so kind for Frederico, because every hour that David steps away is another hour that Rico has to stay late.
Rico definitely listening to our podcast every week mm-hmm. because we had this exact same discussion about the ways in which both sides, aka the Fishers and Rico, blur the lines between family and employer, employee when it suits them. And this is Rico, at least to his credit, calling him out and be like, okay, you're so full of shit. Like this mm-hmm. is the relationship that you're pretending to be, or the relationship that you pretend we have at times to your advantage, is not actually the relationship that we have. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate him calling this out regardless of his delivery.
Yeah. Good for Rico calling this out. And it is like a little bit rich of like, you know, David saying like, oh, well, you know, I had to do this for my friend's kid. And Rico's like, oh, wait, hey, I have kids. You know how you won't let me go and take care of my kids mm-hmm. when I ask for it? Like, I have that issue too.
Yes.
But this is like Taylor ends up like kind of moseying into the body prep room, which is not great. But this leads to like David and Taylor have all these really, really sweet moments together. And, you know, later Ruth is going to say some people don't know how to speak to children. And it's like, Ruth, like... but there's a way that David is like super, super natural in speaking to Taylor and kind of like meets her where she is and treats her with respect and takes her seriously. Like it's a very nice kind of budding friendship that those two have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We got the first iteration when he was trying to distract her from the argument that Keith and Carla were having in the bedroom when it was her birthday. And now here, like you said, it's really sweet to see him again be like, let his wall down for this child mm-hmm. that he does not feel threatened by. And in fact, mm-hmm. feels like he can have a positive effect on in some way just by like not treating her like she's stupid. Like someone who clearly has so much more awareness of the situation around her than other people have given her credit for, seemingly at least in her family. And David, the way he very matter-of-factly speaks to her, like you said, of like, yes, that person was dead. He decide, you can like watch him in real time decide, okay, I'm just going to be honest. I think that is the best thing I can do for this child. Mm-hmm. And, you know, before that, even in their conversation where she's like, she's giving him a hard time for sure. She is not being patient or kind. She wants to draw. She doesn't want to color. There's a whole distinction between that. She hates those cookies. And then when he's like, okay, fine. Do you just want to watch TV? And like, they've arrived at their, like, this is where we can meet. Like the TV is the thing that will like give us peace.
Dude, this was so real as a parent. I'm like, when you just give up and you're like TV and it's like, okay, TV. Okay.
Find peace for the TV.
You're like, I give up on trying to like have a productive day mm-hmm. that contributes in a positive way to your development, and we're just doing TV. Yeah, this was so funny. I mean, and there's some very funny moments here, like Taylor wants chocolate milk and like Dave's like, we just have white milk.
He really did not have to put it that way.
Very white, so funny. White house.
So funny. David, do not talk about milk, not to this child. I don't want to hear about your relationship with milk and whensoever you decide to bring the milk up for yourself. Oh,
Yeah, the cookies taste like shit. This is like, I love this when she gives him the lecture about coloring books. He's like, I thought you liked coloring books. And she's like, no, I like to draw. You can't draw in coloring books because they already have the drawings in them. You can only color in coloring books. That's why they're called coloring books.
Your Honor, no objection. I the logic is flawless here, and I cannot fault her in any regard. I will say she could just color, or she could just draw in the margins. Dave, I thought David was going to say, "Oh, I'll get you a blank piece of paper," but no, he jumps to the TV.
TV.
It's yeah, you know, David's like, you
they've
know
already
what?
Been
I'm not
through
your
the
parent.
Milk. They've been through the
Yes.
cookies. It's like.
I am not your parent, and I'm gonna stop pretending to be a parental figure. Let's just get to the TV, the great equalizer.
Yeah. But there's something about, like, you get the impression that, you know, the Fishers, for all of their flaws, like, they have some semblance of like a family structure. And I'm saying structure, but we're not gonna get into all the architecture quite yet. Mm-hmm. But they have, like, you know, they eat dinner together. They don't eat in front of the TV. There's like a predictability to it that in some ways maybe Taylor responds to. So we get like the very funny, you know, David and Ruth and Taylor having dinner together where Ruth is trying to make conversation. You know, David was once in the fourth grade, and David's like, it's true.
It's like, wait, what? She's like, when she said that, I was like, is that supposed to be at all like illuminating or compelling? Like, that's like, you know, it used to be 1999 at one point. Like, yeah, sure. That's just an objective fact.
And this is like where, you know, David gets a little bit more detail about the relationship with Eddie, which he always like just drinks up with like
interest. When she brings up Eddie, he's like, oh, sure. Anything you'd like to share about that would be welcomed by me. It's so funny to watch her, to watch him react to her talking about Eddie. And just to the Ruth point very quickly, like, this is textbook what they, you know, what we get. A conversation about earlier in the episode of like talking to a child like they're a child and treating them like they're stupid. That's what Ruth is doing.
Like, oh, David was once in the
Like, oh God, like, kill me. This is awful.
And this is like where Taylor says, you know, that mom calls Uncle Keith a punk ass fudge packer. And, you know, David and Ruth both sort of say, you know, that's, we don't use that language. That's hateful language. But this like really sparks something in Ruth. She gets up to start the dishes. She's obviously upset. This was a test, Ariel, and we all failed.
Everyone failed. This was awful. I, you know, and then we get the scene. I don't think it's right after, but we get the interaction between Ruth and David, where it's just the two of them.
Yes.
And Taylor's not there anymore. And Ruth is, this is like her using her powers for ill. Like, this is Ruth gone wrong, so to speak. And this was very hard to watch. Ruth say this to David when she's like, you know, it would be confused, you know, we shouldn't talk like that to a child. It's very confusing for a child.
Your relationship with her uncle must be very confusing to her. It's hard. Like, when we first have this dinner scene, I was thinking like, huh, like, Ruth is upset. Like, why is she upset? Is she upset because like she's recognizing that her son is like, you know, experiences these kind of slurs and is faced with this kind of like hate? Is she, what is she upset about? And then when we get this like kind of tense interaction between them over breakfast, you know, this is when she says, you have to be careful with children because their blueprints are still being drafted by the adults in their lives. And this little girl, her foundation is probably unstable enough without you bringing your relationship with her uncle that has to be confusing for someone her age. This is like, David is the least of Taylor's problems. Like, this is not something that is like, David is, if anything, like, for all we've seen, like, been a positive force, and that like the fact that Ruth comes and brings this sort of projected discomfort, like, yes. And I'll say, like, as somebody who has like small kids, like, they don't have any like hateful, bigoted assumptions unless you put them on them. Like, nothing is confusing to them. Like, right. It's like different kind of relationships, different kind of identities, like whatever they see is just as weird and confusing as literally like everything else, as gravity, as like anything.
Right.
So this is fully Ruth projecting her own blueprint, her own whatever. And you know, it's more of the same from her. And like, we haven't really talked about Ruth's plot line. I don't think there's a lot to talk about, but we know that she's going through the plan. Mm-hmm. She's making these phone calls to people in her life. She calls Hiram, who thinks that they're going to get back together. First, he thinks she's drunk.
Hiram failed that test. Yeah.
Because she's not making any sense. She's calling her friend, like who we remember from season one briefly. She's calling her sister. These people don't care. They don't want to hear from Ruth. I mean, Hiram wants to hear from Ruth. Yeah. Not for the reason that she thinks. But the three people that she's supposed to talk to that she hasn't been able to, that are lower on the list, are David, Claire, and Nate.
Yeah,
and then in this moment that she could be talking to David, she just like throws some bigoted presupposition on him and alienates him.
Yeah, this is really hard to watch for sure, like I said. And the tragedy of one, the only real conversation she had with one of her children, namely Claire, was a pretend one where she called movie phone previously, which we saw. Mm-hmm. And then here, the ironic thing is, like, she is in this moment operating under her old blueprint and her old system of beliefs, and she doesn't even realize it. She's trying to be this evolved version of herself, and instead she is being a monster to her son and like being so casually cruel to him. And you can say for sure that in her own way, in her own mind, she means well. She thinks she means well, but the idea, like you were getting at with children, the idea that like you have to be careful with what you tell. No, this is who your son is. This is a reality. And yes, it's you had a tough time with it, continue seemingly to have a tough time with this reality that you're confronted with. And you want to help keep it taboo to talk to children. Like, the whole point is to try to normalize it for children, because it is a normal thing. And it's really hard to watch Ruth fail in this way, because she seemingly has been making so much progress over like the last season and change on herself in good and bad ways, kind of. And here David hears what she has to say, and he's like, listen, I'm really happy for you that you have this thing going on, whatever, that you're working on yourself, but you're starting to sound like a crazy person. And I forgot how he insults her.
Yeah, he says, what he says is, Mom, I'm happy for you if this whole plan thing has enabled you to draft your own blueprint and patch up some cracks in your foundation. But just between you and me, you're starting to sound like a crazy person. And I think it's time that you kept that shit to yourself and mind your own effing business.
Yeah, which good on him, because this is about as kind of a response as that line of thinking deserves. And he is not trying to, you know, cut Ruth out. He is just trying to cut that part of Ruth out. And he doesn't need to hear it in his own house. This is his house too.
This is his house, yeah.
And he would like to not have to hear that kind of speech from his mother. And I think whether or not she understands why, it's good of him to speak up for himself in that way.
Yeah, yeah. Somebody said something in the Discord, I think, about how it's like tragic to see how like the three children like don't take Ruth seriously and kind of like laugh at her and ignore her. And I think all of that is really true and really valid. But like, Ruth is making this progress, and I'm putting that in air quotes, because I think it's all fake progress. Like, she's doing the things that are easy to do, like having an outburst in a room full of strangers, leaving messages on voicemails of people who are never going to write you back, like call you back.
cleaning. She was going to be cleaning anyway.
Cleaning is like a masterful avoidant technique. If like there's something that you're putting off doing, then just go and give that banister a good scrubbing. Yeah, I mean, this is she's dancing around the only place where the work would really be meaningful. And she's missed all of these opportunities to talk to her children, even when in the last episode we pointed out like Claire was inviting that. Here, David, she and David are alone at breakfast. He says, I know you want to say something, Mom. What do you want to say? Like, she's this whole plan thing is not helping Ruth develop. It's giving her ways to busy herself so she can avoid actually doing the important work. And I would say that she's more distant from her children now than she was even a few episodes ago.
Yeah, I think there's a very, you know, to the point about them being cruel around the dinner table, that's just unfortunately a fact of life. Like children are children. I'm sorry. Like, I don't mean that children should and should always
I know.
But there's just like a way in which the siblings bond over their experiences and interactions with a parent. That's just that's who they have. Like, you feel lucky that they have each other, because sometimes it's an only child and then they have no one. But it's, you know, there is the really lovely, just quickly I'll say, like the lovely part where Claire, when Ruth asked David about Keith when they're all together at the beginning, and the way that Claire smiles at David, again, like so lovingly and like protective of like, oh, I'm so glad that Mom knows now. And I'm so happy for you, David, that like you are able to share this part of your life. But she's kind of, like you said, she's more distant than ever from her children. And she's coming to their interactions from this almost like Brenda-like place of, I know so much better than you, and I understand, I have all this mumbo jumbo
language. I have a diploma
now.
From flower school.
I have a diploma from plan school and flower school. And now I have these words.
She's a multi-hyphenate now.
Exactly. I'm a multi-hyphenate. I have these fancy words to like throw at you to show you that I'm not an idiot. And it's like, she's being condescending ultimately. And children, whether they're Taylor's age or David and Nate's age, do not respond well to condescension from a parent. Yeah. It's never going
to
work.
And Ruth says that from a knowing place. Like, some people don't know how to talk to children, because she's acknowledging that even though her children are now like also miserable, repressed people in their 30s, she still does not know how to talk to them.
No. And it's sad, because you do, obviously what this is all getting at is, you want to, as the viewer, and the show is doing a good job of this, you want that catharsis for all of these characters, and you want them to truly bond and truly be there for each other in a way and say all the good things and all the nice things, all the meaningful things while they still have time.
Yeah.
But we know from real life, it doesn't always happen.
Yeah. Yeah. I was so mad at Ruth at the end of this episode.
Yeah, it was definitely infuriating, and it was definitely, like I said, it felt like progress, if only from David's side, for him to be able to speak so specifically to her about that and be able to like compartmentalize the parts that are about the plan and how she is now acting, and the parts that are about like his life, which is kind of, if that's how she's going to be about it, then it's literally none of her business.
Yeah. In slight contrast to that, the episode ends with Claire and Nate embarking on their 20-hour drive back to Seattle, and Claire says, you know, it's comforting to know that you're just as effed up as the rest of us.
Yes.
And Nate's like, you know, no, I'm not. And they have this little like back and forth, but it's like, that is such a more of a shared moment of authenticity than what like Ruth and David are able to share. So there's a bit of a nice contrast there.
No, for sure. Love. This is the bonding that we were hoping for when they set out on this journey. So it's really nice that she sees she sees Nate in a different way, in a more honest way. She feels like, and this is important to not just sibling relationships, but any relationships, like for you to feel like you understand a person more, understand their motivation more is really important. And Claire getting closer to anyone, I approve, even if it's actually Gabriel would be the only exception, but everyone else I approve.
Well, good, he joined the Hare Krishna, so we don't have to worry about him.
Yes, he shaved his head, Mom. I don't want to talk about it.
love that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They all have, I mean, Claire, Ruth said it at some point earlier this season. They all have their nasty little secrets, and this is one of them.
Love a nasty little secret. So, yeah, that I think that that brings us to the end of this episode, Ariel. We'll be back next week talking about season 2, episode 5, The Invisible Woman.
What? They made a movie about... Oh, wait, that was a man.
It's 2002, it's... Ariel. It's not all about men anymore.
It's not all about men. It's about tofu and sometimes women.
Oh, wait, let me see. Is this somebody? Oh, my gosh. We're going to get a guest appearance in the next episode. Ooh, I'm very excited about
don't
it.
Don't tell me. I hope it's tofu again.
No. It's the tofu meatloaf. Until we get the chance to dine on more tofu meatloaf, Ariel, what else do you have going on? Where can people keep up with you?
I have so many other things, just a couple actually, going on the network. I am contributing to the torture of animals in some way by going to the movies a lot. Although movies
how
these
dare
days are mostly digital. Yeah.
So they're not processed with gelatin.
Now it's like they're processed with like the digital hooves of these digital horses?
I think it's cows. I think she said cows. I don't know.
Yes, perhaps. Either way, covering movies every week on Posher Recaps Theater with Grace. This week, we actually don't have an episode because there's not much going on in the movie world. So we've taken the week off. But other than that, also covering Masters of the Air with Rich. We covered Band of Brothers and The Pacific previously, which are, you know, executive produced by the same team and kind of exist in the same universe. All three shows about World War II. So Masters of the Air finally premiered. Philly and I did a deep dive into the first two episodes, and we'll be back every week, including this week, with each new episode that Apple premieres. I am on Twitter at that other Ariel.
Wow. So much stuff. I am on the network covering True Detective, having a really, really good time with that. Grace and I are doing the immediate reactions right after the episode airs, so you can catch our episode 3 podcast, which should be in your feeds now. I might have already plugged this, but I'll plug it again. I got to appear on Pod Friends with the great Matt Scott, doing an interview with him. It was a lot of fun. That's on the RHAP network in the Pod Friends feed. So if you're interested in learning more about me, you can listen to that episode. And as always, you can keep up with everything I'm doing by following me on Twitter, where I am at Dr. Amanda R. And Ariel, you and I will be back in a week to talk about season 2, episode 5 of 6 Feet Under, The Invisible Woman. And until then, dear listeners, rest in
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm Victoria Cash. Thanks for calling the Lucky Land Hotline. If you feel like you do the same thing every day, press 1. If you're ready to have some serious fun for the chance to redeem some serious prizes, press 2. We heard you loud and clear, so go to LuckyLandSlots.com right now and play over 100 social casino-style games for free. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.